sky's so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
Yeah. Hey.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255, or you can text us, 57500. We'll be taking your questions and calls again following our top of the hour feature. And this morning, we've been talking about how our yards are getting smaller. We're kind of living in smaller spaces, Ton, and that makes gardening more challenging, especially if you've got vegetables. It's tough to have a big space for a vegetable garden. So this morning, the top of the hour feature is gardening in small spaces, and we've asked Liz Hamilton, who's a horticulturist, to join us this morning. Our listeners are very familiar with Liz. She's filled in for you, Ton, when you haven't been here, and she's been a guest before.
Yes.
So thanks, Liz, for being with us this morning.
So you've,
thanks for having me.
Turn your mic on.
It is.
It's on.
Okay.
It's on. We just need her to be a little bit louder.
Thank you for having me.
There you go.
Liz is now working with the Utah Department of Ag and Food, and I was going to have her just quickly describe what she's doing with them and then get into the topic.
Yeah. I am in water optimization. So I help with, I help farmers with figuring out their grants to optimize their current irrigation methods. So if they're using flood irrigation, we can help look at ways to improve that, say, to a wheel line or a pivot.
Something more water efficient.
Yep.
You know, that's good. But I think that's a great thing to do because we are saving water. But as I have gotten to know you, I know that you do a lot of artistic things in your yard as far as landscaping design. And we had you specifically come in for this particular topic.
Yep.
And so what are some things, just I guess we can start with economy, low cost, but you know, it's really common right now for people to have a tenth of an acre lot or, you know, a condo or a townhome adjacent. You have two in the same. So what are you encouraging people to do to be able to garden simply and easily?
We're fixing my mic. Sorry about that.
No, it's all good.
Gardening efficiently and easily. So if you don't have any dirt space, open dirt, which might limit you, say if you're in a condo or a really small townhouse and you've got mostly patio back there. My folks lived in D.C. for a long time and had a 10-square-foot backyard and just had a foot strip that went all the way around the outside, and we helped them install some stuff. So container gardening is also really great. It might be a little cost prohibitive because containers themselves can sometimes be really expensive, like if you're going very fancy with it. But there are also really good economical options out there, like grow bags are really an easy way, or you can salvage and thrift materials. I've seen lots of people, and myself included, do like the big dump days around the city and go pull stuff out of
use. Before we go too far, will you describe grow bags?
Yeah, so they're like a fabric material that's breathable, and you can fill them with soil, and they hold their shape. And they don't, they're UV light resistant, so they don't degrade over time like a regular fabric would. They drain freely, so it's not going to hold water. And you can put all kinds of stuff in there, from fruits and vegetables to flower arrangements and all kinds of stuff. And they have handles on them, and you can shift them around and move them. And every year you can change what you're doing in them, and they come in all different shapes and sizes. So you can do long grow bags, you can do tall grow bags, medium-sized. Just picking one, like any container, that will be the right size for the end root reservoir on the plant choice that you're picking.
Where do you purchase them?
Yeah, they're everywhere. So most of your local nurseries are going to carry them. I actually haven't seen them at big box stores, but I can't imagine they don't carry them. And I mostly just am not looking. And then also Amazon carries a huge wide range of those products. Any of the online garden supply stores, like Garden Supply, will carry those, and they, all different companies make them. They all have pluses and minuses and come in all different colors too, and those are really useful and economic ways to use your your patio space if you don't have garden space.
Yeah, you talked about recycled containers, and we have a gentleman named Matt Jench who is a horticulturist. He is on an LDS mission right now, but had him on several times on using containers, like you said, just recycling tree pots. And he will grow, he said, up to 60 pounds of produce in a 25-gallon tree pot.
That's amazing.
By using succession planting and things. And so you can be really productive in these little grow bags and pots.
We should tell people, too, we've done a video with Matt that they can find on our YouTube channel, the Greenhouse KSL Greenhouse YouTube channel, if you want to see exactly how he does it.
Yeah, we'll have to have Michelle pin that to the top of the Facebook page so it's easy to find.
Yeah, but one thing, talk about vertical gardening, though, how using trellises and things can really help you save space and still, you know, get some produce.
Yeah, get some produce. And even if you're not a produce gardener, also just get you some color and some green in your space if you don't have a lot of it. So I kind of mentioned my folks' garden from when they lived in D.C. and they just had that small outer line around the edge of their little 10-foot by 10-foot spot. So we could put trellises in there and we did vines. And your vines don't have to be anything in particular. If you're not committed to something, you could do beans on your trellis and do vertical gardening. You can do squash on your trellis. You can do melons on a trellis, but you'll need a catch to hold the melons so they don't fall. But if you're not into vegetable gardening and you want something a little more permanent, you're looking at clematis or wisteria, any of these things can add a lot of splash of color and not take up a lot of space on the ground and really be a beautiful addition to your yard. And trellises, you can make a trellis out of anything. So you can salvage sticks and make something yourself. You don't have to go out and buy something off the shelf. You can get really creative with it. And you can use plants as a trellis as well. If you have something, I've seen this and you'd have to pre-plan, but I've seen people where they use something that died in a spot.
Oh, and then I've done this. Yeah.
And
a
then
tree that I kept for years. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they'll plant a vine on it and train it up. And it's gorgeous. You can don't limit yourself. There's lots of really great options out there.
We see people incorporating their vegetables into their flower beds, but I think you need to be thinking about a few things when you're going to do that so you're not planting something that's going to grow taller than something else in front of it. So what kinds of things would people think about if they are kind of thinking about incorporating some of those things into their flower beds?
So this is one of the things I love to do. I have a smaller yard, and I do have designated vegetable growing space, but I do... The majority of my yard is for looks. And so I leave open spaces when I planned this yard and I put everything in with my shrubs. That you do your bones first, your trees, and then your shrubs. And then if you're going to put in herbaceous perennials, and then you figure out where those are going to go. But I have left and continue to utilize open spaces that are there on purpose that I thought about when I was putting these garden spaces in. And so I have a spot that I use cabbage in every single year, and I have a spot that I use lettuce in every single year. And I try to incorporate vegetables where I can, and they make the most sense. So I'll grow a row of dahlias, and in the middle of my dahlia row is tomatoes, and I'll alternate. And they all look beautiful because I've got dahlia flowers everywhere, but in the midst of all of this, there's tomatoes, and I plant them together because they grow the same, very similarly. So I'm going to trellis them all up together. They're all going to come up at the same time. And then I try to incorporate flowers, too. I don't know if you're familiar with cup and saucer vine, either of you. That one's really cool. They come in purple and white. And they have these big, beautiful, I can give you some photos you can put online, big, beautiful bell-shaped flowers, quite large. And you can use them as a cut flower because the stems that come off the vine are about 12 inches. And I grow those in with my tomatoes when the tomatoes are trellised. And so it's tomatoes and flowers. And the nighttime hummingbirds love them. It smells really good, looks really beautiful. And then it's not just a utilitarian space. It has other options.
What I love, so Ton is more a consumer, like he produces utilitarian. And you are more like me. I want to make sure it looks beautiful. And I'm incorporating things that look really nice together. But I hadn't thought about the dahlias.
Yeah.
and the tomatoes being planted in the same area because they have the same kind of growing situation.
And then I do some tomatoes in cages, and in that area where I combine them with dahlias because I grow my dahlias in cages, right? But then I also have tomatoes that I trellis against a fence, and so I'm pruning them back to a trellised flat shape. Makes it easier to prune, or makes it easier to harvest, I'm saying. And then with those, that's where I'm going to incorporate my other annuals, because I'm going to rip them all out at the end of the season anyway. So that's the cabaya vine, and that, or cup and saucer is the other word for a cup and saucer vine. And then also scarlet runner beans. That's really fun to incorporate with your tomatoes, and you're pulling in the pollinators and you're getting your tomatoes. It's really beautiful. And I've also done, when I used to work at the farm, when I was a horticulturalist over there, we did one whole fence line with Jack B. Little pumpkins, trellis, and scarlet runner bean, and purple runner bean, moonflower. And it was like red and purple and then orange pumpkins everywhere. And it was absolutely stunning. And then down below along the same fence line, we alternated in other crops. So we were rotating out like beets and garlic and things like that. So the whole row was all kinds of different things. And it's really, if you're growing upwards, you have that option versus if you were growing pumpkins laying flat and beans trying to trellis on a regular trellis instead of straight up and down on the fence line, it would have been more difficult, or we couldn't have fit all that together in one space. You can really maximize if you grow upwards.
It's a good thing that people can find this show in podcast form, because I was going to keep notes and you rattled off so many different things. I'm going to have to go back and listen to the podcast to make sure and make my list.
So this is a wonderful thing. I know we're getting near a break, and we'll continue talking about growing vegetables in small spaces throughout the hour, but there's just so many different things you can do artistically.
Options. Yeah, tons of options. It can be beautiful and functional, and you don't have to limit yourself.
All right. Liz is going to be with us throughout the hour. We need to take a break. The number to call, 801-575-8255. Jan, we know you've been waiting some time. We'll come to you next. Number to text us, 57500. Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria, Ton, and Liz with you this morning, taking your calls and questions. 801-575-8255. You can text us, 57500. We've left Jan hanging on the line. Hopefully Jan's still there. Jan, are you still on the line? And what was your question?
Yes, I am. I'm still on the line. I've enjoyed the show.
Oh, thank you. Go ahead.
So I've had on my front porch like a small bundle of straw. And I've always heard, go and put the straw in your garden, till it in, it'll be good for it. Well, I decided this year I was done with the bale. I want to do something different on my porch. So I took it out, threw it in my garden. And before it really turned cold, I started seeing all this hay coming up. Or I'm assuming it's hay. It was just nice little green plants that were coming up.
Probably have barley coming up.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Either barley or wheat.
Okay. So, well, I did some, got online and started looking at it, because I was just doing this from what I've been told in the past and didn't really check it out. And they said you have to be really careful, because there's a lot of them will have herbicides in them. What do I look for this coming year, or is this the year to solarize my garden?
They're not. If they were sprayed with an herbicide, generally it's not going to be harmful to what you're doing in your garden, just because those kinds of herbicides are restricted use. And we don't have a lot of like widespread dicamba, and Liz can step in here too. Dicamba would be one that I'd be worried about, because it can stay in organic matter in cool weather for months. But generally, I think your bigger worry is actually the barley or wheat and weed seeds that may have been in the straw.
Yeah. Okay. Well, tilling them under won't do me any good.
So you don't usually want to till under your straw, because it takes a really long time to disintegrate and incorporate itself. And so then it's usually not adding anything. It's better to use it as a mulch. Have you already tilled it in?
I'm afraid I have, yes.
So add some nitrogen fertilizer, just at the lawn rate that it says to use it, to your garden to help break it down more quickly.
Uh-huh.
That'll help.
Okay.
That'll help it disintegrate faster for you and add back to the soil. You may need to do it a couple times over the course of the season if you're seeing yellowing on your plants.
Okay. We have really clay soil, so my thought is, man, we're just going to get this in there and break it up. But
yeah, organic matter can help break up clay, so it was a good thought. just adding that nitrogen
choice,
and will help you get to that point, the point you want to be
okay.
at.
All right, Jen.
Okay.
Thanks
Great.
So much for
thank
your call
you.
This morning.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
Bye-bye.
Guys, next listener is asking, they have two flowering pear trees on each side of their driveway in Sugar House. They say this year, though, in the fall, they dropped hundreds of thousands of very small fruit, marble size, all over the driveway, which they say is covering the entire area. They're wondering, is this unusual? Or was it a weird
no,
year?
No, I laugh when these trees are sold as fruitless pears.
Because they're not.
They're not. And the best thing to do as soon as you see them drop is to get a leaf blower and just blow them into the lawn. Because kids aren't really playing on the lawn, and let them decompose into your lawn.
Okay.
Any other suggestions on that, Liz?
No.
That's it.
Those flowering pears are so overplanted. They're beautiful trees, but I personally do not recommend them anymore just because they're invasive in many states, you know, taking over forests, and they've been banned in a lot of states. And so I've tried to shift people over toward crab apples that are persistent and clean trees. You know, they don't drop a lot of fruit, or some of the hardier flowering cherries. Do you have trees that you like as a replacement for pears?
Yeah. I mean, I'm really, and this is a basic answer, but I really like the snow and summer crabapple, and there is no fruit period. I mean, you're not giving back to the wildlife, but if you were looking for a fruitless tree and you're wondering, now I've got all these trees dropping fruit all over my driveway, that is a really good option for you. But the springtime, it will drop thousands and thousands of petals that you'll have to,
you know, if you're complaining
away.
About flower petals, shame on you.
They're not complaining about flower petals.
No,
they're complaining about all sorts of yucky fruit all
yeah,
over their yard.
Spring snow crab apples, another fruitless crab. Mm-hmm. And I've had people complain, well, it gets petals everywhere. And I was like, you know what?
I like petals.
You go eat some rotten food or something and punish yourself.
I did plant a crab apple that they said was fruitless, though. And now after about 10 years, there's fruit all over the driveway right now.
Yeah, sometimes. There's spring snow crab apple, which is fruitless, and there's another one called snowdrift that looks mm-hmm. identical. Same bark, same flowers, but I'll bet you got a snowdrift.
I don't know what it is,
but
it has
fruit. Snowdrift is what they lined the main walkway into the old city courthouse over here.
Oh.
And it's a messy bugger.
I think so. But it's beautiful, though.
Yeah.
It is beautiful. And so the crab apples, the old-fashioned crab apples were really messy. But they're over the last 25 or 30 years, there have been several of them bred that are either fruitless or the fruit sticks to the tree. And it offers food to birds in the winter. So.
Okay. We need to take a break. We're going to come back following the news. Liz is going to stay with us. Talk more about how to grow things in small spaces. Number to call, 801-575-8255. Text us, 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis, and Liz Hamilton joining us this morning for the show. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We're focusing this half hour on how to garden with small spaces. And Liz, you've been telling us about all the wonderful things that you're doing, vertical gardening, trellises, things like that. But there are also vegetables that are genetically made to or created to be smaller.
Yep. Yeah, there are some really great breeding genetics out there that are on the market for the regular home grower. And when I used to work at the farm, we specialized in growing smaller varieties, so the fruit itself was smaller, but what the result is that the plant that it grows on is typically smaller too, because that genetic applied to the whole plant across the board. And we grew fruit that was smaller because we were donating to feeding senior programs like Meals on Wheels. And, you know, they can't eat usually like a 30-pound watermelon in one sitting. And so we're looking at a 1-pound watermelon, something that can be consumed immediately and is easy to cut open and things like that. So I have a plethora of fruits and vegetables that take up less space. So things like, if you like spaghetti squash, you guys probably both know spaghetti squash mm-hmm. vines are enormous. They go everywhere. They're going to climb up your fence and take over your neighbor's yard. But if you're interested and you'd like something similar, there is a little tiny variety out there called angel hair. And angel hair is a little tiny, like single serving mini spaghetti squash. And it kind of looks like an 8-ball zucchini, but it turns yellow like a spaghetti squash, and cut it in half and two sides is good enough for one person. And it bushes on not a regular vine, so it grows kind of like a zucchini. So it's taking up way less space than something on the vine, as an example. And so if you like watermelon, everybody knows Crimson Sweet, but they get big, and you need a lot of space to get a lot of vine to grow a large plant. And so there's some really small varieties out there on the market. There's one called Love. And Love is just a really tiny, little tiny personal serving size, softball size watermelon. There's one called Fairy, and it's a yellow watermelon. You cut it open on the inside, and it's bright pink, so it's pretty, and it's edible, and it's just one little tiny single wow. serving. Really great for kids, if you have little kids, and they just don't take up very much space. You're looking at 3 feet or less in diameter of growing space for little tiny vines like that. There's also options for fruit trees. I think a lot of people rule out fruit trees immediately when they think of they have a small space, but you don't have to limit yourself. So there are some really great Zeiger genetics out there. Ton and I were kind of talking about it earlier when we were on break, but I have two different varieties in my yard, and they're both nectarines, and they're called Super Dwarf. And one variety I grow is Arctic Babe, and the other one is Nectazee, Z-E-E in the end there. And they're just kind of across each other from my yard. One's a white nectarine, one's an orange nectarine, and they're going to grow max height about 4.5-5 feet and maxed width about 5 foot, and they grow like a shrub instead of like a tree. And so you can put those in your yard and you have all the benefits of a peach, but you'll get a smaller harvest obviously because you're not getting a larger tree. But for the small yard, you can have regular size nectarines and peaches for a very small space. And one of the great things about those is too, they go well in containers. Because they're so dwarfed, their roots are so dwarfed, and you can get a decent sized container and they're not going to fight to break out of that container like a regular sized fruit tree would.
There's a dwarf peach I've really liked because it has ornamental qualities called Bonfire mm-hmm. that is a dark red, almost purpley leaf with red fruit, and it's very edible. They're good peaches. And it's going to get a little bigger, 6 to 8 feet, but it looks like when it's more mature, a little mini palm tree.
Yeah, I've seen them. They're really pretty. Kind of like a substitute almost for if you're thinking about putting in a red leaf Japanese maple, but yes. you really would like the fruit production, this would be a great substitution.
It is. And they're quite beautiful. Bonanza is another one that's just a green leaf. Gets about 6 to 8 feet, but it's very common in the nursery trade.
Yeah, really, really beautiful. I think there's a peach called Pix Z too.
There is.
Yeah, that kind of is a partner of Nectazee. They've got some really delicious ones out there. There's also columnar fruit as well. So if you're interested in apples, there's columnar apples. I have a couple. I think there's only about 4 or 5 that you see regularly on the market. So there's not too many options. But there's a red, there's a green, and there's a blush. And you need at least 2 to pollinate. And I actually have 2 in my yard. And I planted one on either side of I have a really small space. It's about 2 foot wide running soil. Between my house and my walkway path, and in the middle of that is my air conditioning unit, which is hideous. And so, and it's the entrance to my backyard, and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do in the space, and it can't get too wide. I wanted it to flower, and I wanted it to do more, and so I chose 2 columnar apple trees, and I planted them on either side of my air conditioning unit there to kind of hide it. And it actually looks great, and it takes up the space perfectly, and I'm not going to worry about having to hack it out of my pathway regularly.
Yeah, the only place I could find those columnar apples last year was Stark Brothers.
Oh.
Online, and I know other places have carried them, But and sometimes you'll pay a little bit more for these dwarf peaches and apples and things than a regular tree, but the benefit is the small size.
Yeah, you're paying for the genetics there for sure. I usually find them at Lowe's and Home Depot and for the columnars. I've seen them in a couple nurseries in the valley, like Westside has them. And then IFA, always. IFA is
interesting. I probably shouldn't have paid. I think I paid for Stark Brothers almost $100 apiece.
Oh, really?
So I overpaid, but it was the only place I could find them. I also ordered them in August.
Oh,
so
you were really excited about that.
Well, I just needed to get them in, and I wanted them to establish in the fall. A colleague named Jake Hadfield is growing them. I oftentimes outsource my experiments. I'm letting him take care of them, and I wanted to get them in through the fall, so I did pay a little bit of extra money for them to get them going, but I'm glad that they're so available locally in the spring, especially.
Yeah, another thing to think about, too, would be like espalier trees. So they're regular genetics, but they've been trained to be in like a trellis-looking format against you, so you can plant against a fence. Or in a not wide area, but it's not, I wouldn't say it's like a beginner fruit because you need to really know how to prune it because you don't want to snip off all your flowering buds or miss something there. But if you feel like you're a mid-level gardener and you're looking for something for a small space, it's worth a shot.
Well, they're so ornamental. If you enjoy formal gardens, you know, the French gardens especially, the espalier is something that just fits right in.
Yep. And if you're really adventurous, you can do it yourself. So instead of buying a pre-espaliered...
Which I've seen more of, by the way.
Yeah, people are getting brave, and they look great. I've not really seen anything that's not turning out right. But if you do it yourself, I've seen people do them with cherries and figs and pears and quince, all kinds of really
new
cool
hobby
stuff. Yeah, yeah. But it's a time you have to dedicate some time.
All right. We need to take a break. We'll be right back. You can call us 801-575-8255. Text us 57500. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria, Anton, and Liz with you this morning, taking your calls and questions at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We have been talking about planting in smaller spaces since we don't all have huge yards that we can just devote specifically to a vegetable garden. And, Ton, this last year, your experiment was dwarf tomatoes. So talk about what you found and what were your favorites.
Well, a lot of them I outsourced to you and others because I'm so busy in the spring that I actually didn't plant.
And if you want to have another experiment like this, I'm all in.
And
by
so
the way.
I wish I could remember all the varieties up front. I have them in notes and things and should have brought them. But I ordered tomatoes from Park Seed and Totally Tomatoes. And I found 6 or 8 varieties, and what I noticed, and you found the same thing, is that you really, even though it's a dwarf tomato, they need a pot with a volume of 2 or 3 gallons.
They do much better. Much better
in
a larger pot.
Even
but
though
I think
says,
any plant would. Yeah,
even though it says dwarf, you need to know that a dwarf tomato, a patio tomato type tomato, is still going to get 18 inches to 2 feet high and wide in an appropriate pot. And so there are smaller ones out there. But what I learned last year was the care of them and timing. Because people that planted these and put them outside in mid-May, they did great. But those that waited till June because of our sustained 100-degree temperatures, none of them started to produce until October. And so that timing is critical with any tomato. But you can find a lot of these if you look for us. And I know, Liz, you have a lot of experience with these too.
Yeah, I mean, I've grown them small just to try them out too as well. And there's also not just dwarf that grow really tiny, but there's also tumbling varieties like Tumbling Tom and things like that that are meant to pour out of containers and stuff like that, which I think are really unique. And you can mix and match them with flowers too, so you get the best of both worlds in the container, tomatoes and flowers.
You think like me. Okay. Tumbling Tom.
Yeah, Tumbling Tom.
Written down on the list.
That
okay.
one's a really
But you said Wasatch Community Gardens, yep. at their spring plant sale,
they do.
Have lots of dwarf tomatoes.
Yeah, they have a whole little section where they've advertised for people who are in smaller spaces. They cater to a lot of folks that are inside city limits. Mm-hmm. And so they have, and they trial, and just as a background too, these guys trial these tomatoes before they ever decide to grow them on and then sell them to the public at their once a year plant sale. So they've trialed these, they like them, they don't just trial them for growth habit, they're looking at flavor, all of it. And then they have a group of volunteers that get together and taste test all of these and rank them, and if they don't rank high enough, they don't get to go on the sale. So it's really interesting. So whatever you're getting from those guys is going to taste good and hopefully perform really well for you too. But they sell a whole bunch of those dwarf genetics. It's really interesting.
I grew a cherry tomato that was a determinate cherry instead of indeterminate, so it stayed 2.5 feet tall, so you guess you could consider it dwarf. But it was a BHN variety, and BHN tomatoes are kind of uncommon to the public, but you can find them here and there. And they were a yellow orange tomato, and they were wonderful.
Oh.
And so I'm going to order more of them this year because I've been impressed with all of the BHN varieties, because they will they don't self-abort at hotter temperatures, or bred for tropical environments that are disease resistant. But I'm going to try more of those this year.
Yeah, I have really enjoyed some of the smaller tomatoes, some of the like smaller sized tomatoes, not even dwarf, but I find that they perform better in the high heat. And maybe it takes 30 of them to make a tomato sauce instead of two, but I'm going to get a regular consistent harvest. And so...
Well, if you're eating them fresh and not making sauce out of them, there's a difference, right? There, one of our listeners does want to know where they can get the Love watermelon seeds, though.
So, gosh, where did I purchase those? I actually think you can get them, because Totally Tomatoes doesn't sell just Totally Tomatoes.
Uh-huh.
I think you can get Love at in the Totally Tomatoes catalog, but if I remember correctly, I purchased those through Johnny's Selected Seeds. And
it looks
like
Park Seed has them, Territorial.
There you go.
Seed. I'm just looking online. Trueleaf Market has them.
Oh, yeah. Trueleaf Market is going to have them.
They're local. Mm-hmm. And you can order from them. In fact, if you order from them, you can pick up your order same day if you give them an hour or two.
Oh.
Yep, if you can make it to the city.
I've asked Ton before about his favorite gardening brochures and seed catalogs. Do you want to share with us your favorite?
I'm very productivity
right?
oriented, so mm-hmm. Johnny's
Consumer.
And Parks. And
yeah,
there's one that I use pretty regularly that is less known, and that one is Ivy Garth. Are either you guys familiar with Ivy Garth?
Nope.
So they're a wholesaler, but they'll sell to the general public. They don't limit themselves to only commercial growers, but they specialize in commercial growers. And because of that, when you buy a packet of seeds, you're looking usually a minimum count of 200.
Ooh.
But if you're thinking of saving seed and you're good at that, you can buy from Ivy Garth, and you know, it'll be $50 for a packet of seeds, but you're paying for really good genetics. And they have if you cannot find it, you should call Ivy Garth.
Really?
I mean, they have got perennials, herbs, vegetables, like just endless amounts and hard to find varieties. Flowers, sweet potatoes, it's just endless. And it's really, really cool. I know I'm stuttering, but the catalog and this is one hard part about them. The catalog, there's no pictures. So if you want to see it, you're going to have to Google everything you look up. But they do have a description. And if you order a catalog from them, it's about 300 pages, and it's a huge and it's spiral bound. Not even joking. It's awesome though. Really cool. I used to order from them a lot when I worked for the farm, and I got a lot of seed from them, and it was wonderful. Wonderful quality and just anything you could possibly
Okay. For those of us though that aren't going to go that big. What is your favorite? That's pretty big for a lot of us.
Well, I mean, if I buy a 200 packet of seeds, which is usually my what the minimum that you could buy from them. I would just ration it out and then save. But I do really like Johnny's. Harris, have you guys looked at Harris seed?
That's
at all?
One I've actually ordered dwarf tomatoes from that I missed listing. I like Harris.
Yeah, they're very good. I think they're located out of upstate New York, if I remember correctly. And they've got a lot of really cold hardy varieties of vegetables and really good quality. And they are the patenter holder for the tsunami variety of wave petunias, and you can get direct seed from them on those tsunami varieties, which are incredible performers. And this is weird for a petunia, but they self-sow. So if you plant them one year, you'll have endless wave, beautiful self-sown petunias for at least 5 years, unless you decide to rip them all out. But I let them come back every year.
I love it. All right.
My grandma used to collect her petunia seeds. They were species petunias back in the 50s and 60s and just reseed them every year. And she had ground cover petunias for years and years. And it was pretty.
Yeah, really beautiful.
Liz, thank you so much for being with us this morning, spending the hour talking about gardening in small spaces. And I love how you incorporate the flowers with the vegetables because that's kind of... I get excited about that. We are almost out of time. I want to make sure people know, though, they can find the entire hour in podcast form at kslpodcast.com and just check all the wonderful things we've talked about. And Ton, we'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.
All right. And have a great weekend. And Liz, thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
And again, check out all the wonderful things we have on social, on the KSL Facebook page. You can also check out the Plant of the Week.